This interview is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. In Practice is an independent publisher, and all opinions expressed by guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of In Practice.
So we are going to spend today speaking about a piece titled Constellation Software, VTEC, RECO, and M&A Sourcing, Proprietary versus Broker Channel. How long have you been thinking about deal sourcing channels for serial acquirers?
Probably too long.
Is there such a thing as too long? Is it possible?
Well, it's interesting because at a high level, you can split it down into broker versus direct, but there are many nuances in the way the transaction unfolds. But I think that this piece of research really came from the Red Eye conference where in Stockholm, where I met the VTEC CEO, and in the meeting, I asked him how often he sees a Constellation operating group in a transaction. And he said, hardly ever. We never see them effectively. And I don't know, maybe that wasn't shocking to most people, but I was pretty, it made me kind of step back and think a bit deeper about how and why that might be. I mean, an obvious reason why this could be the case is because there's so many businesses that are transacting and maybe they're just buying different things. You know, VTEC typically pay up for more, call it higher quality, maybe faster growing organically, SaaS type businesses, and Constellation are at least perceived to be buying lower quality on-prem, slower growing assets. But I think then I asked the VTEC CEO how they source their transactions. And he said, majority, if not all of them, are through or via brokers. And from the work that we've done on we've probably interviewed 10 odd former Constellation BD executives or M&A guys, the people that are actually involved in the day-to-day combat of sourcing and moving target companies through a funnel, their channel is effectively the inverse of VTEC and frankly a lot of the other acquirers as well, where most of the other acquirers are sourcing via brokers, and Constellation seem to do the majority of theirs, at least from the people we've spoken to, 60-70% and up, 80% through, you know, direct channel, typically outside of auctions, are being nurtured for a number of years. I think the average lead time is just over four years for Constellation. And so that led to this piece where it led to various questions around how much does a proprietary funnel matter for long-term returns in these types of businesses? How does the multiple and underlying quality of the business differ across broker-led versus proprietary channels? And how does the sourcing channel define potentially an acquirer, a serial acquirer's moat, like a Constellation or VTEC? So that's really the context for this piece. But you know, it's been a topic that I've been looking at for a good number of years now.
Why these three companies in particular for this piece?
Well, I think I was mainly looking at VMS, frankly, and Constellation and VTEC are two of the obvious listed players that have this very defined strategy. And really, you know, it goes back to, I think you were actually with me when Frederick made that comment. Frederick at Roco made a comment years ago around sourcing transactions, which I love. I think it's probably my favorite comment on this whole topic, where I can't remember what exactly happened, but I think, I don't want to butcher it completely, but I think a lot of the other, this was one of the early Red Eye conferences actually years ago. And there was a bunch of other acquirer CEOs up there explaining and telling everyone how they kind of have, you know, they nurture these leads for years and do coffees and drinks and yada yada. And then Frederick gets up and says, yeah, we just use brokers because you can't buy a business not for sale. Something like that. And so And so he effectively uses 100% brokers. And has 1,000 brokers across Europe that they look at and just effectively have this inbound funnel of stuff that comes in from all these advisors. And look, it's worked for him so far, clearly. It's worked, you know, Lifco, I think, have a similar strategy. That's clearly worked for them. So I don't think this is a case of one or the other works or doesn't work. I think they can both work. But I think it's also curious to look in a bit more detail about how these businesses scale and what actually works at scale, you know, because they're also deploying, you know, different amount of capital, especially Constellation and VTech.
And that element of what is scalable, I've seen you plug away at for the better part of 5 years.
I think, look, if you just look at the numbers, right? I mean, Constellation is deploying probably 5 to 6 times the amount of capital per year than VTech in small acquisitions only. So Constellation probably aim to do $600 to $800 million dollars per year in small acquisitions, 80 to 100 acquisitions, right? Couple a week. And VTech is, you know, VTech's doing 15 to 20% of that, 100 odd million, $150 million bucks a year. And if you look at the actual incremental return on capital for these businesses, Constellation again is 8 to 10% higher. So, you know, VTech will do around, depending how you calculate it and considerations, but 15 odd percent around that number, and Constellation is definitely north of 20%, close to 25%. And so why is that? How is this possible? And the way I look at this is there's no one answer, clearly, right? I don't know exactly what's happening, but I think there are multiple, what I call, like, overlapping moats potentially. One is like the sourcing side. But actually, what I think is more important that we discussed before as well is actually the operational side, how you actually run these assets post-acquisition. And I think I still think that that's an underappreciated advantage for companies like Constellation and likes of TransDigm.
What makes you say that it's underappreciated?
Well, yeah, the multiple, the trader wouldn't suggest it's underappreciated, but like, I think if you speak to most people about Constellation, they wouldn't necessarily say that they're the best operators of software assets, right? And also TransDigm to a certain extent, you know, people just say, oh, they just, you know, hike the price and everyone looks at how much capital they can deploy, which obviously these things, you know, the capital deployment is a critical factor, but I think from the transactions that I've looked, I follow many of the actual small acquisitions that Constellation makes, Antopicus and all the many of the Constellation groups, and there are some that you can find the actual full accounts for, either if they're in the UK or if they're in the Nordics, or even some of these, you know, I've seen some businesses where they've carved out assets from publicly listed businesses, and then you can go back and look at the filings and see actually what are the financials look like that they're acquiring. And, you know, they're not acquiring these 50% EBITDA margin businesses off the bat. You know, these small companies are not running super efficiently as Constellation runs. And it's the same with TransDigm. I mean, TransDigm just bought a business the other day, a small publicly listed business, at like a 300% premium to the last close. And again, if you go and look at their financials, they've got a 20% gross margin. TransDigm has a 50% EBITDA margin. So clearly there is like there's a operational playbook here that is critical. And it's not just pricing, you know. That matters, but I think that's what I mean by misunderstood. I think people, from my experience in speaking to other investors about this, it's not many people look at how much experience these companies have in running these specific assets that they acquire. I think that adds up to something. You know, I can't quantify it in how much it matters versus other stuff. You know, all these factors matter. you have to deploy the capital, you have to have a, you know, an operational playbook. But I think, yeah, the more I spend time on this, the more I think actually, yeah, I'm just impressed by how good they are at running these assets.
Yeah, across operations. And I think I've watched you for a number of years just methodically go through operating function by operating function, core capability by whatever you'd call, you know, the different lines of business activity or however you'd categorize them. You've been through them one by one.
Well, just on that point though, because it, you know, and that would be like if I just play back what a pushback would be from what I just said, it would be, well, like there's also a big philosophical stance on how should you run these assets, you know, and like clearly Constellation is running these assets for shareholder returns. Now, you know, one would argue, and many times I've interviewed people that have, probably most people that left Constellation, frankly, because it didn't obviously fit with their philosophical way of running software companies, right? Where they might want to do more R&D and might want to launch new products. And Constellation would have a view that, well, if you can't explain the potential ROI on you know, of this R&D, then you're not going to do it. And some might argue, well, that's not how you generate, you know, that's not how you innovate, and that's not what you do with X, Y, Z. So I think, yeah, there's a big kind of caveat here where this is, you know, there's a certain philosophical view around how you should run companies. I mean, at the end of the day, like the numbers speak for themselves and the returns speak for themselves to Constellation, but that doesn't mean that's the right way to do this. You know, other people might prefer to try to be more innovative, you know. And so I think long story short is that, you know, bringing it back to this piece of research, I think having a proprietary funnel isn't the be and all, you know, be and end all of everything in terms of like, it's not critical. It's clearly other industrial acquirers and VTech have done very well from acquiring from brokers. But I think especially as you scale these businesses, if you're going to continue to acquire from brokers at scale, you better have an operational playbook to drive value because you're going to be paying up as you deploy more capital.
Yeah, and then I guess the critics would also say that it's worked so far and that over time that you may be introducing fragility into the system by maximizing for, you know, a narrow set of variables. But that's a conversation, I think, for another day. What I, in the time that we have now, I wanted to get into a bit more of how a piece like this comes to be. You've been thinking about these businesses, and I say these businesses, whether it's industrial, we'll talk about this kind of company, namely serial acquirers, highly acquisitive industrial holding companies, vertical market software serial acquirers. Some people call them inorganic compounders, businesses that take M&A seriously. You've been working on these for a number of years. We've been publishing the IP research format for really about 3 years, about 2 years formally, 3 years since you started publishing longer synthesis pieces on the platform. And I think it would be helpful for both our existing subscribers and anyone that's listening right now that is new to the service to understand. So we publish around 50 to 60 pieces like this a year. We, at the outset of the year, we don't actually have a formal plan as to what exactly is going to be finished and published. I want you to, with this specific piece, as regards this specific piece on deal sourcing, how does this come to be right now? And when do you decide that something is ready? What parameters do you use?
I think you can't force these things. No, and I've probably been looking at this for a good number of years. And it just so happened that, you know, meeting the VTech CEO instigated this piece, but it was probably brewing for a long time. And I think, look, it's still an ongoing piece of work, right? It's not like I'm going to stop looking at this now. You know, so I'm always looking and trying to learn a bit more about how these businesses work and how much does it matter if you source only from brokers versus if you only source proprietary funnel. So the way I typically work is have many different types of questions or lines of questioning for companies that I study and follow over very long periods of time. And then, yeah, and then just kind of let them come to the surface when I potentially think I've received an insight or received something interesting from someone. In this case, it was the comment around they never see Constellation in deals. And that then pieced together various other information that I had around where these companies source deals from. You know, I'd known for a good number of years now that it takes Constellation on average 4 years to transact on something from outbound to LOI. You know, multiple people I've spoken to over the last couple of years have told me that the 60-70% of the deals that they do at Jonas or Harris is all proprietary. So I think that was all there. It just, you know, sometimes it takes something to kind of instigate and bring this to life. I think the thing that's interesting about Constellation is they have this, when you speak to most BD people that worked at Constellation, right, for years, they have a Salesforce instance where they have 60,000 to probably close to 100,000 companies now, VM software assets, as potential targets in Salesforce. You know, one guy I spoke to said he worked there for around 5 years. He said he added 4 companies to the funnel. Now, he couldn't find a software company that wasn't already in there. Now, maybe he wasn't looking hard enough, but either way, that's his job. That's pretty nuts, right? So, like, they, you know, they've clearly mapped out, like, every... Well, it's likely the most complete database of software assets and software-related assets on the planet. You know, and they're nurturing these leads constantly. And if you look at... You know, there was the Constellation... They had this Keep Your Capital program that they deployed and they pushed down to the operating groups a number of years ago, which effectively means that the operating groups, the teams within the operating groups have to keep the capital they generate. So the free cash that they generate, they have to redeploy it in other assets. Otherwise, it comes back up to their quarters. And so that led to a big push by the group to acquire many more BD reps. So they've got, you know, they've got over 200 business development reps now doing M&A globally. Like, I don't think there's probably a company. I don't know if a PE firm would have, any PE firm probably doesn't have 200 looking solely at software. I mean, I'm not sure if Thoma Bravo has that or Vista, but that's a lot of people. You know, and if you look at, you know, if you just do some simple math on, say, 60,000 leads in Salesforce, 200 BD reps, that's 300 company targets to manage per person. If they're earning $100K per year, that's like $300 a lead. Like, that's like economies of scale, right, in sourcing these companies. Like, no other company can compete on that now. And I think there's different kind of schools of thought here is that, you know, most people that we speak to from Constellation say that this is a moat for them. Like, the Salesforce effectively is their moat. The proprietary funnel is their moat. They have less auctions. They have an unparalleled funnel that they can nurture, more control over the funnel, etc. And then most of the acquirers, the obviously use brokers, you know, say the opposite. You know, like Frederick, it's too expensive for me to try and nurture these guys. I just want to buy stuff that I know is for sale. I actually interviewed Magnus in the last interview that we done. He said the same thing. He said that actually, from his experience, he hasn't seen any advantage in proprietary sourcing. He said actually it could be more expensive and more of a hassle, frankly, because the owner, you know, thinks their business is worth more than it is and they haven't got a broker to keep them in check. Now, but, you know, they would say that if they're sourcing more from brokers, right? And they obviously haven't, you know, they don't need to deploy as much capital. So, you know, I think there's two schools of thought here around broker versus proprietary sourcing and how much each one is, it really matters.
Well, and this speaks to the way in which we've worked, that we published for years, that you've led our research function, is there are these evergreen questions, or there are some evergreen questions. There are some questions that, you know, there's no, I think it's quite hard to get a conclusive answer on this. And yet there are some interesting things that arise by continually plugging away and speaking to people and comparing and contrasting the way people who are doing things that superficially look similar, how exactly they're going about it.
And there's nuances, right? I mean, Magnus is deploying, he's acquiring 10 million of EBITDA a year, right? It's a different level of scale, you know, and so it doesn't...
And to be clear for our listeners, we're talking about Magnus Söderlund at Bergman & Beving.
And I think the beauty of this is that both can clearly work, right? I mean, Vitek has done well, Lagercrantz has done great, Lifco's done great, and yet they don't need to have a proprietary funnel. Now, they're obviously at a different scale to Constellation. So, you know, my evergreen question of these businesses is the law of larger numbers and diminishing returns on capital. And you're seeing that already in some of these businesses, right? Where, you know, VTech, for example, and if you do rely on brokers only and you've got to deploy lots of capital, there is a human capital challenge of how you transact this many on this many companies a year, paying up potentially if you've got to deploy more capital. And yeah, it's difficult, you know, if you don't have an operational playbook, which most of these companies, I think they're very good at running these businesses, but I don't think they have the, you know, a Danaher business system that's, you know, that's as proven or maybe like TransDigm or even Constellation. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how these businesses evolve over time, because yeah, the law of large numbers is real. It's difficult.
I mean, it is. And it's, I guess it's one of these, sort of the first more obvious questions you ask is how long can these things go on and what changes as they get bigger. I'd also draw attention to, you know, in this is one of a series of pieces we've done, comparing and contrasting operating practices, operating models. We've compared Lifco and Halma, looking at their M&A team structure, their operating group structure. We've compared M&A accounting practices across a number of serial acquirers. Before we wrap up today, give us a few more of your evergreen questions that you continue to plug away at for these serial acquirer business models.
An interesting question for the big boys like Constellation or TransDigm is really how they can translate what they've done in a single vertical to other verticals, right? So the last AGM last week at Constellation, you know, Mark is clearly looking at other areas to deploy capital and you know, pushing more into hardware and software related businesses. And TransDigm has also explored different acquisitions, not strictly FAA regulated parts, but also testing businesses and call it verticals adjacent. You still serve in aerospace and defense, but not, you know, manufacturing parts. So I think that's a big question that is probably one of the most important for the bigger companies. And then there's obviously a bunch more around like just competition in VMS, right? It's still just keep hearing of people starting these businesses, acquiring. And that's also one thing, you know, I didn't mention too much about on the proprietary funnel side, like the level of competition that's come into the market over the last 5 years. And they're all looking at brokered processes. So while, you know, most people, you know, Magnus, Bergman and Beving and a few other people that we've spoken to, again, suggested that just because you saw something direct doesn't mean you get a better price, which is true, potentially. But I think at scale, you know, I find it hard to believe that there's not a benefit of not sourcing through brokered processes. And especially if you've got an influx of hundreds of new competitors over the last 5 years, where, you know, I don't see how that wouldn't really be a benefit for Constellation. And the numbers kind of suggest that they're still buying these small businesses at great returns. And they mentioned that last week. or they're paying up and they're just getting way better at operating them, right? So, and that's why I think this, you know, that's why I think there's like these overlapping moats here that I think the interplay of them creates the compounding and the results that Constellation get, where you have the sourcing, the direct sourcing moat at scale. You have economies of scale where you can nurture these leads where no one else can afford to. And whether you get them at a better price, or whether you just have more control, whether you get better assets for, you know, pound for pound better assets, I think it matters. And then you have the operational edge that I think, you know, that certainly does matter. And so the interplay of those two things, I think, are pretty important. And I mean, yeah, and who knows what happens over time? Maybe, you know, if they can unlock a different vertical, then yeah, maybe the multiple goes to an even more ridiculous rate.
Yeah, we have a research roundup which subscribers and actually non-subscribers can access. It's available for free on the site. The piece is titled Research Roundup Industrial Holdcos, where we have curated much of the last five years of work. We've shared a few topics that we continue to lean into and will continue to do for, I think, easily the next few years and I think almost certainly the rest of our careers, as these businesses, this model is pretty interesting if you can get it right. Speaking of which, it's pretty interesting to find out where they go wrong.
I think we know how they go wrong, but preempting that is the name of the game.
Well, yeah, there's a piece that's been brewing for, I think you and I spent probably 2.5 years talking about a piece that has been brewing on serial acquirer failure modes. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
As always, this is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Please do your own research.